Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me today. First up, he's the other lore columnist over on Blizzard Watch. That would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi.
Hello, everybody.
How's it going?
I got turned into like a vampire or Scott Summers this week, and it's not quite healed yet, so that was fun.
That sounds like not fun at all.
Nope. Not fun at all.
All right. Well, other co-host with us hopefully is not Scott Summers, because that would just be weird. Instead, it should be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Well, hey there. And no, I am not Scott Summers.
Okay, good.
You are safe in that regard.
Okay, good. He's not my favorite. Anyway, we had some stuff happen between last show and this show. Last show, we were talking about like the end of Legion and everything, and it was last Monday. Okay, so it was in between. Warbringers number one dropped. It was Warbringers Jaina, obviously about Jaina Proudmoore, and then we also had the story quest start for the pre-expansion events. They're calling it War of the Thorns, which I find interesting. It's been a while since we've had a war that was actually properly named and just like emphatically named instead of just sort of inferred here and there. So I kind of want to talk about both of those things. We do have some emails and we may get to those, but first let's talk Warbringers. What'd you guys think?
I mean, it was exceedingly well done. I think if you didn't know much about Jaina Proudmoore as a character, it might have been a little opaque, but overall it pretty much laid down what she's been up to, what she did, why she's currently questioning the way she lived before. I think it's a pretty natural evolution of the character. And in terms of just the way they did it, it was really well done. The music, the singing. Laura Bailey's got an amazing singing voice, it turns out. Overall, I thought it was really good.
I think it was important. And I'll say it because of this. We talk about storytelling through various forms of media, whether it's comics or video games or books or short stories or audio dramas, but we never, or at least up to now, we haven't really talked about song. And song is kind of important because in like the history of the world, there's a lot of like historical stories or oral traditions that are passed down via song. And we've seen this in the past with, you know, even Warcraft with like Lament of the Highborn. This is very important in that regard because it's something that I want to personally see more of, because I think it speaks to us on a very instinctual level and draws us in, even if we don't know the character. And sort of to that point, I saw several people who had never played the game, didn't know who Jaina was, coming up to me at like work or, you know, friends of mine that knew I play were like, who is this? Like, because even they were watching it because their friends were linking it everywhere, and they were really taken by it. Now, not only does Laura Bailey, as Rossi says, have an amazing singing voice, which, you know, dang, girl. but the whole composition of the song is important too, because it's a traditional dirge. And I was going back and forth with a bunch of people on this. It's not a shanty, which is very freeform. It's very, you know, you make up the words as you go along. It's timing, it's key, everything about it was a very distinct dirge. And that simple choice combined with the story that it was telling, the animation, and the quality of the song and lyrics was just absolutely gorgeous. I listened to it probably 1,000 times in the last week and a half. So much so, and I was telling, you know, Anne and Rossi before we started recording, I had to have the music for this so that I can learn how to play it, because it hit me so hard. So yeah, really, really good.
Kind of playing into what you were saying about people that you don't know. My sister, I've gotten her into Critical Role. Yay. And obviously Laura Bailey is one of the characters on Critical Role. Well, she plays one of the characters on Critical Role. She's a person. But when they came out with this Warbringer thing, I was like, wow, okay. I mean, I figured that she had a good voice regardless, but I hadn't actually ever heard her sing in anything before, and this was just gorgeous. So I told my sister, I said, oh, you have to see this thing that Laura did where she was singing. And my sister was like, okay. I said, it's World of Warcraft stuff, though. She goes, oh, that's okay. I showed it to her, and she got to the end of it and was like, okay, so who is that and what's her deal? And my sister has no interest in Warcraft whatsoever. She's never played the game. She knows it's a thing that I do, but mm-hmm. she has no interest in it whatsoever. But she was like, can you tell me everything there is to know about that person? Because she was really cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that is such a perfect story of what something like this can do. Yes. Yes.
And the thing that I appreciated about it is that the song itself, a lot of people are like, I there are some people who, well, okay, we'll get into the more questionable aspect, not the questionable, nothing in it is questionable. People are questioning parts of it, and we'll get into that in a minute. The thing that I appreciated is that the song that she's singing here, this is a song from Kul Tiras. It's from the land that she grew up in, and it's a song that somebody over on the islands wrote after what went down after the Third War. So it's an immediate, hey, this is what they think of Jaina. Like, it's immediately, first impression, this is what she's going to be going up against when she goes back to Kul Tiras. And the weight of that is something that we haven't seen before. Jaina's an interesting character because she's been through a lot. And the whole thing with Arthas, I mean, everybody always talks about the whole thing with Arthas where she had to leave him behind and then he became a Lich King and then she had to deal with that in Wrath. And yes, she was crying a lot, but wouldn't you, if the specter of the entire expansion is wearing the face of your dead lover? Yeah, I would cry too, probably. Nobody really talks about what she did to her father. She doesn't even talk about what she did to her father. It's not something that's ever... She does it at the end, you know, in that particular... Was it Frozen Throne?
Yeah.
That campaign was in Frozen Throne, wasn't it? Yeah. The whole introduction to Orgrimmar with Rexxar and everything. Yeah.
Yep.
It happened, and she sounds appropriately sorrowful about it, like she's sad about it, but then we never hear it referenced again. So one of the things that I've been waiting for with Jaina, particularly after Theramore and everything that went down there, I don't know if we've talked about this before. I think we've talked about it at least on the Blizzard Watch podcast, where after Theramore, I was fully expecting, when Jaina just kind of went missing, that she would go back to Kul Tiras and go back to, like, find her people, because her dad was kind of right in a way, and maybe Theramore was what she needed to see that. And no, I'm not saying that her dad was right. Dalen's another one of those characters where it's like he represents the old way of thinking. And Jaina was kind of from a newer way of thinking. And with Theramore, she was kind of slapped in the face with, yeah, you remember how you were trying to be diplomatic with these guys? They don't want it. And in a really explosive kind of way. And everybody that she had called friend, or, you know, anybody that she'd thought of as family, all of those people that she ushered safely away from the Eastern Kingdoms and away from the plague to take refuge on Kalimdor. They were gone, like, blink of an eye. And she was kind of responsible for it. So I kept expecting her to, like, go back to that at some point, and it didn't happen, and it didn't happen, and it didn't happen. And then Warbringers came out, and I'm like, ah, it's happening! It's finally happening! So yeah, I was really excited about this. In regards to the questions that people have, there are a lot of people who are asking whether Jaina is, like, possessed by the old gods, or if she's suddenly a necromancer now, or what's going on with that. Do you guys want to talk about that?
She's not evil, like, or at least not in that capacity. And I maybe kind of sort of can see where people are saying that, but, like, she's just seen some things. She has seen a lot of really terrible things, and she has been broken down over the course of a decade at this point. Like, this is, like, put yourself in her shoes. Put yourself in a position where everything you believe, everything that you built your life upon, has been slowly or not so slowly eroded and stripped away from you, taken away by various means, whether it was, you know, a bomb going off in your city, or friends that you thought you had turning their backs on you at you, what you feel is one of the most grievous sort of slaps in the face that you could possibly suffer. And then combine that with the fact that you literally have nothing else, and you look back on all of your sacrifices, everything that you've done that people told you not to do, that you were so convinced that you were going to, you know, this is the right way to do it, only to find out, well, you're done messed up, or it wasn't there, and you have nothing to show for it anymore. Like, I don't care who you are, that's going to mess with you, and that's going to make you a lot more sullen or driven, depending on who you are. And she just happens to be very driven right now. That's not evil at all.
Rossi, you want to chime in here?
Okay, I'm just going to do it. I don't care. If Jaina had convinced Varian to destroy the Horde at the end of Siege of Orgrimmar, he'd still be alive, and Tel'Drassil would not be on fire.
Yeah.
If people listened to Jaina and destroyed the Horde, Azeroth would be better off. There is no disputing it. No, I don't. You got your talk, man. You can come in when I'm done. The Legion, whether or not they could have beaten the Legion, I don't know. We'll never get to see that because we didn't get to see it. But Rathian thought they could.
And here's the
thing. You know, Rathian thought that the Alliance could take out the Horde, consolidate power. And here's the other thing. If they'd killed Garrosh Hellstream, no matter what, you read War Crimes. War Crimes is one of my favorite books. The end of War Crimes, it turns out that the four or five, I can't remember how many of them there are at the moment, but the August Celestials were putting,
and there's four.
Yeah, the August Celestials were putting the Alliance and Horde on trial. If they'd killed Garrosh, they would have been condemned. I don't know what would have happened then. Presumably the August Celestials would have attempted to carry the sentence out on them. So that's a thing.
Here's my thing. If they had gotten rid of the Horde at that point, there would have been no trial, because the trial wouldn't have happened in that capacity. Maybe there would have been some kind of judgment passed on the Alliance. Yes. But Garrosh wouldn't have escaped, wouldn't have gone to Draenor. We wouldn't have gone to Draenor. Gul'dan wouldn't have come back. The Tomb of Sargeras wouldn't have been opened. We wouldn't be dealing with the Legion at all. They'd probably find some way around that, because Sargeras is clever, but...
Well, at any rate, it's impossible to argue
whether
or not, you know, could we have beaten the Legion without the Horde's presence? I don't know the answer to that question. It's fair to say that neither the Alliance nor the Horde as entities participated in this war. They were busy messing around in Storm, you know, in Storm... Stormheim today. They were busy messing around in Stormheim. So they didn't participate as groups. Individual members of both factions took part, but not the leadership. So we'll leave that out for now. It's certainly an argument you can make that without the Horde's presence and Horde members, they wouldn't have beaten the Legion. But it's fair to say that if you're a Night Elf right now, that probably is a relatively cold comfort, considering you just had your entire way of life destroyed. And here's the other thing. People argue over and over again that the Alliance and Horde have been at war this whole time, and Sylvanas' arguments make sense. And they do make sense if you're willing to be the aggressor. If you're willing to attack people who have not actually attacked you first. If you're willing to firebomb, you know, civilians in their homes. If you're willing to do these things, then yes, her arguments make sense.
I think we're moving ahead a little bit there, right?
No, that's from Cataclysm, dude. The Horde was firebombing people in their homes in Cataclysm.
It's fair.
That's not moving ahead. The Horde have been doing this the whole time. There's a problem. I have a real problem with this in that you can't paint Jaina as some kind of evil necromancer or old god possessed, whatever.
I think
when,
that the
when
reason...
she's just been right the whole time. Her arguments are valid. Whether or not
let me believe the Horde did anything, that's not the point. Let me step in for a second here. I think the reason that people are assuming that she's indulging in some kind of necromancy is because of the content of Warbringers itself, because there were a lot of ghosts and dead people, and she was pulling a ship out of the water and handed over a necklace to a dead guy.
I think that's more metaphorical than anything.
The dead guy is also... Guys, you have to think about who that dead guy was.
Mm-hmm. That's Daylan.
That's her father. So it's possible what you're looking at is a metaphor for her coming to grips with the fact that she has moved back towards his side of things.
Or the fact that she's been haunted by his death since it happened, and this is just a physical representation of it that we're seeing, right?
This is just like an artistic representation of everything that she's going through. Because that necklace that she handed over when he disappeared, she didn't hand over a necklace to anybody because she's wearing it in Battle for Azeroth. Like, she's chosen to put it on and keep it. And kind of take on that
and
mantle
that
of her father's daughter, you know.
That act that actually causes him to fade out. It's the act of saying, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. I've accepted it. Whether or not you know, Alliance or Horde, wherever you feel on this subject, whatever faction you play, Jaina's actions make sense from her perspective.
Yep.
And you can't argue that they don't. And you can't argue that if she was to come to you and say right now, if you'd done what I said, Varian would be alive right now. If you'd done what I said, Tel'Drassil wouldn't be about to be burned. She'd be right. You can't argue that she wouldn't be. If they'd listened to her, there'd be no Horde to attack them right now. That's just a fact. If you're Jaina Proudmoore, you don't need to be crazy. You don't need to be possessed by old gods. You don't need to be, you know, working necromancy. You have your unshakable belief in your own rightness, which has been reinforced over and over again. That's all it is.
Okay, I'm going to take us back onto the subject at hand, though, which is like the short itself. Like I said, I think that a lot of people were taking the events of the short in a literal capacity, like she was actually seeing ghosts and talking to ghosts. No, that was in her head, guys, and it's, you know, Joe mentioned that the song is a dirge, and it is, kind of. It's her, it's not just a dirge that they composed in Kul Tiras for the death of Daylan Proudmoore. In this capacity, in this animated short, it's almost a dirge for Jaina's old life.
Mm-hmm. It's a metamorphosis of self for her.
Yeah, for that optimistic diplomat that she was, the one that wanted to work together, the one that spent most of her life wanting to work together. You have to understand that Jaina, like, if you go into the Arthas novel, there's a scene in the Arthas novel where a young Arthas, like on their first or second meeting, they're still like kids at this point. Arthas takes her to the internment camps where the orcs are being imprisoned after the end of the Second War and shows her. And her immediate thought is of sympathy. She's like, poor things, because they're lethargic, they're imprisoned, nobody's letting them out, and they're just sort of, you know, sitting in the dirt all day. They don't have anything to do, and she feels kind of bad for them. And that's always been how she's seen them. That's always, like, from when she was a kid growing up. And yeah, in Warcraft 3, there was some hesitancy on her part when they got to Kalimdor and Medivh said, you guys need to work together. She wasn't immediately gung-ho about that idea. There was some questioning involved, particularly because, I mean, her own brother was killed by the Horde. So where does that fit in? You know, where does all of that fit in with the people that she's speaking to at that moment, with Thrall? Thrall is unlike any orc she has ever seen. Thrall is arguably unlike any orc anybody has ever seen, because Thrall was raised in a specific set of circumstances that had him with an entirely different upbringing. He wasn't really raised as an orc, he was raised as a slave, and he was raised by humans with the human language and almost human ideals. It was a human who taught him about the concept of armor. It was another human who taught him about reading and how to read and brought him books and all this other stuff. Like, he grew up outside of that horde way of thinking, and he had to relearn it. In that way, I almost think that he was probably a really ineffective leader for the horde, if the horde wanted to be the horde of old. But Thrall was trying to lead them into a new future, and some of them followed him willingly, and others began to question over time. Yeah, you know, you let us out of the internment camps, you showed us what it is to be free, but now you're wanting to shake hands with the same people that locked us up? What's up with that? You know? So you have Jaina, who spent, like, the majority of her life in this role as a diplomat, trying really hard to foster that kind of peace. And Thrall stepped down, walked away, put Garrosh at the head of the Horde. Garrosh immediately started an outright attack on Theramore, destroyed the city. And when he destroyed the city, he destroyed Jaina Proudmoore. And I think that this period of time in which she's been absent and we haven't seen her from, you know, the end of Mists through Legion, we've seen her in little bits and pieces, but we haven't seen her entirely. I think it's because Jaina's been trying to figure out who she is. And Warbringers is almost, it's not just her coming to terms with how her father's kingdom feels about her and her actions. It's also her coming to terms with herself and who she is and saying goodbye to that optimistic diplomat, because obviously that never did her any good. It didn't do the Alliance any good. It didn't do anybody any good. All it did was result in a lot of people getting killed. So, I don't know. I really appreciated this short, and I don't know what the other two are going to be like.
Well, I mean, we can speculate about it, but we don't actually know until they show them. The Sylvanas one is going to be fascinating just to get to see what's actually going on. I would love to get something of the internal life of Sylvanas Winwrighter. We don't get a lot of it. We got some of it in War Crimes. We got a taste of it in the comic, the Three Sisters comic.
We got a little tiny bit of it in Dark Mirror.
Yeah, I think Before the Storm is interesting because it does everything in its power not to show you what she's feeling or, thinking. She tells you things, like, because she's talking to Nathanos. She takes actions, but she never actually, you never get to see how she feels about them. There's very little of what she's like as a person. You get to see it through other people's view of her, and that's interesting, but it doesn't, you know, but none of this is about Jaina, which is supposedly what we're talking about, so I'll shut up now.
No, it's okay, because we can move on to Sylvanas. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is obviously we've got the first part of the War of Thorns going on right now in-game, and this is kind of the lead-up to the Battle for Azeroth expansion, and obviously what we're seeing here is a lead-up to what happens to Teldrassil. And spoiler warning, you guys, but, I mean, honestly, if you
it's so quick.
If you have been breathing anywhere in the Teldrassil's burning. I mean, it's going to burn. It's just a matter of time now.
We haven't gotten to that week yet.
We're counting down the weeks now, and it makes me kind of sad. But what we're seeing here with the whole War of the Thorns thing is that very much the impetus of it all is the Azerite that's popped up in Silithus. And Sylvanas is so weird at this point. But you have to give her props on her logic as far as that goes, because she is being very analytical, and she is being very, when you sit down and you look at the bits and pieces and you don't think about the people, Sylvanas is going, okay, there is stuff in Silithus that we want. The Alliance wants it too. We need to cut the Alliance out of the picture so that we can keep this stuff, because it's highly dangerous, very explosive, and it'll make some really amazing weapons. And if the Alliance gets it, they're going to use it against us, probably. So how do we do that? Well, Theramore's already out of the picture. What's the other big Alliance stronghold on Kalimdor right now? That would be Teldrassil. So we need to go cut them off at the pass and make sure that they can't get any ships in and make sure that they can't even get access to this continent. And that's kind of her reasoning for sending people north. And it's solid reasoning, as far as that goes. From a tactical standpoint, it's solid reasoning. At the same time, I mean, my first character was a night elf, you know? Like, my first steps in World of Warcraft were on Teldrassil. So all of this is hitting me kind of like punch to the gut as far as that goes. And I mean, I can admire her from a tactical standpoint. Yeah, she's got sound thinking and everything. But at the same time, it's like, everything is falling apart. And the thing is like, I like both factions. And I make no bones about that. I have played both factions. I have mained Horde for God only knows how many years. But I've always had an Alliance alt. And I've always played Alliance too. So when they come to a head like this, it's really hard for me because I like both sides for vastly different reasons. And when they butt heads, I'm just like, babies, don't fight. But they're going to fight whether I like it or not. Sylvanas, though, there are a lot of people that are also kind of wondering about her intentions and what's going on with her and whether she is evil or if she is corrupted by some sort of unknown force, like she's got the old gods behind her. I don't think that she's got the old gods behind her, because the Void is afraid of her. I think that there's something else that's driving her, and maybe we should talk about that. Joe?
I don't like any of it. and here's the reason why. I don't think what she's doing makes a whole lot of sense to begin with. Because, okay, if you want to take it like, oh, she's eliminating a port city. Not really, because attacking a city directly is a lot more resource intensive, especially when you're coming right off of a war, than just maybe attacking your enemy's supply lines or playing pirate and nailing the ships that are, you know, transporting the goods. That would have been the smarter play. And so her attacking Teldrassil doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Also, map-wise, I'm fairly confident the Exodar is the next stop in that chain, not Teldrassil. So Darnassus is further north than the Exodar is.
It's like everybody's kind of forgotten that the Exodar is there. I'm kind of wondering about that, too. I'm like, well, you guys are going to, like, get rid of the tree or whatever, but what about the giant Naru ship that is fully functioning?
Guys, to be fair, her plan is not to get rid of Darnassus or Teldrassil. It never was. And her plan is not to stop the Alliance by destroying a port. Her plan is to take over Teldrassil and Darnassus and use the civilian population as hostages.
Yeah,
so she's committing a war crime on a scale far greater than burning the city. Burning the city is relatively merciful compared to what she actually tells people she wants to do.
I agree with that.
Up front, I want the civilian population to serve as hostages because then the Alliance won't dare to counterattack.
Yeah.
Now, but there's also more to it as far as I'm concerned as well with that. It's also, like, I understand she says that and that she's going to be, you know, wants to commit this atrocity. I mean, we're sort of spoiled because we know that Teldrassil is going to burn at some point.
Yeah.
But even beyond that, taking away, even if we didn't know it was going to burn, of the quests, she makes it a very clear point that she wants to kill Malfurion, which seems really odd to me.
Why
I'll tell you why right now. It's very easy why she wants to kill Malfurion. Malfurion is the most powerful druid in existence.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't kill him, you have absolutely no chance of holding the giant world tree you want to take captive. You've no prayer. You cannot hold it against a guy who could basically talk to it and tell it, could you bend or shake yourself a lot?
You know, but
grab everyone on you.
We don't know that the world tree is, I hate to say this like this, but we don't know if that's capable of it.
You don't know that one way or another, but if you're Sylvanas, right.
But why wouldn't you go after the person that's been running the army for?
Oh, no, because armies are easy to deal with. In fact, eventually she's probably going to convert them all to undead anyway, and then they'll serve her. You're never going to get Malfurion to work for you.
I don't know. A whole army corps of priests that can channel the light might be a little problematic for her.
I have to break in here. I'm just imagining Teldrassil, like the world tree Teldrassil. making a fist and just punching.
Now,
punching the Horde army.
Yeah, and like, the thing is that
giant tree beyond all imagining, you know, size. You can't even render it in game. It's that big. Just like this big splintered fist coming out of the sky.
Now, I will say, fair,
like, let's put this another way to put it too. She's got priests on her side. She's got all sorts of priests.
And for now,
can she get druids to actually fight Malfurion directly? Obviously, if you're playing a druid in the game, you're taking the quests. The answer is
my other set of problems.
But can you actually say get Hamul Rune Totem to commit, you know, all Tauren druids
turn
to fight
on
Malfurion?
The Cenarian circle.
Yeah. So, but kill him. You know, if you have him assassinated, you can throw the Cenarian circle into disarray. It's going to take the Night Elves time to get a new guy up there, and in the meantime, that incredibly powerful, scary powerful, so powerful that Sorfang knew he couldn't take him. Sorfang was like, nope, he'll kill me. I can't beat him. That's in the story. We've read it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorfang himself knew, I can't beat Malfurion in a square fight. Sylvanas can't beat Malfurion in a square fight, and she knows it.
Now, yeah, that's fair, and
it's
I understand that he's a
Malfurion,
super powerful being.
It's not just Malfurion you're fighting, it's also nature.
Yeah, and for that matter, I mean, yes, there's other people she should want to have assassinated. The fact that she's not saying go kill Tyrande is kind of scary.
Yeah, that's...
Tyrande's an incredibly powerful priest. I get you on that one. But I feel like this is a situation where Sylvanas has struck to the heart of the matter.
Did she?
Yeah, because Tyrande is stronger than Malfurion psychologically. She's a stronger person. She's been through more. Malfurion's been sleeping on and off for like millennia. So how do you take Tyrande out first? Kill her husband. Make her come at you angry.
But we
make
already
her come at
know,
you sloppy.
But we no, already you, know that that doesn't work.
You know that. Does Sylvanas know that?
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's another part that bothers me is like the assumption that we as the champion of the Horde wouldn't have told her that or here or given
that.
A report.
The Alliance character might have done that. You don't know which side in what zone.
That's fair, but I'm just saying in the greater context. The other things that bother me about it, though, in general are twofold. One, shaman and druids taking on this quest that are basically seen as murder wisps and tearing down nature. Upsetting the balance, like, just happily is really weird to me. Like, there's no, like, not even a line that, like, even in the text when you advance the quest, it says, I'm not really comfortable with this, and her going, you're going to do it anyway because you are my soldier. Like, I would have been fine with that, but it's just like, yeah, I'll go murder elves and burn forests down for you. Sure, I got you, Dark Lady. That bothers me a little bit because I don't see shaman and druids going along with it. And the other thing is, about her two goals, like, taking the world tree and then knowing eventually that it's going to burn, but also killing Malfurion, seems way too aligned with everything that happened in the Emerald Nightmare. And I understand where people are coming from on this one. Because in the Emerald Nightmare, what were the two things that were going on there? Like, trying to kill Malfurion and corrupting world trees. Like, there's an entire boss encounter that is a corrupted world tree. Like, we know that the old gods want something to do with them. So I could see where they could think maybe something is pushing her in this direction. And I'm almost inclined to agree, because while it makes some sense for her to want these goals, it seems way too darn convenient that those are the first two specific things she wants to accomplish.
You know, I think that that's part of my problem. I think that's part of everyone's problem with this particular storyline, is that it's a little hard to swallow, particularly if you're a Horde player. Because if you're a Horde player, you don't get that chance to say, I don't want to do this.
Especially when you have a book that says, I don't want to commit to war because we can't do it, right?
Yeah, you don't get that opportunity to offer any kind of feedback or anything. The Dark Lady says, jump, and by the way the quests are written, you jump up and say, okay, how high? Without having any kind of opportunity to, you know, express your discomfort with the situation.
I don't recall them
asking me to, you know, that kind of stuff back in Cataclysm when I was playing a Tauren and I was doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
But we know that they've done actual class stuff in quests before for that type of stuff, so why couldn't they do it now?
Yeah, the thing is like, this particular one, I think it almost hits harder than the stuff that was going on in Cataclysm. Yeah, the stuff that was going on in Cataclysm was pretty heavy duty, particularly, you know, going into Mists of Pandaria, all the stuff that was happening with Theramore was stuff where I was like, I don't really know if I want to do any of this. The Theramore scenario was really hard to do as a Horde player because I was like, none of this stuff is stuff that
I
agree with. Like, I'll do it because there's an achievement involved and I get a toy or whatever, even though I've never actually used that toy because, frankly, the fact that they made the Mana Bomb a toy, I'm like, yeah, that's tasteless. It's one of those things that's always kind of conflicted me as a Horde player, and that was part of the reason why I think I enjoyed Mists of Pandaria so much, was because there was a subset of Horde that actually stood up and said, hey, you know what? All this stuff that we're doing, maybe it isn't great, and maybe we should do something about it. And they actually turned on their own, and I was like, okay, all right, I can get behind this angle of it. I can, because I totally want to punch the heck out of Garrosh Hellscream. That sounds like a wonderful idea. I'm not being given that option here, and a lot of people are worried that this is going to turn into Garrosh Part 2, the sequel, right? Where we're all going to turn on Sylvanas or whatever, and I don't really want the situation to go that route either, because Sylvanas, I don't care for what she's doing. I don't like what she's doing, and I don't like how she's just so casual about sacrificing people, even if they're just people on her own side. Like, what happened before the storm?
You notice none of them are forsaken, like, in the scenario.
Right.
In the quest, none of them are.
In Before the Storm, like, the stuff that she did in Before the Storm, where she cut down an entire swath of her own people because they dared to try and defect, essentially, and go back to their own lives, and she cut them all down without a second thought about it. And I don't necessarily, like I said, I don't agree with anything that she's doing. And I think that the stuff that she's doing is particularly cruel and horrific. At the same time, as a character, I kind of have to appreciate that character because it's interesting having that kind of a character in a story. Like, you need that kind of villain in there. And we've been systematically wiping out villains left and right. So is Sylvanas actually stepping up into this villain role, or is she just there temporarily? And the farther along we get, the more I have to question that and wonder exactly where we're going to go from here and what's going to happen with it. Keep in mind that we've played through Battle for Azeroth beta, and I mean, I haven't gone through the entirety of the Horde experience on beta. I was saving some of that just so that I could play it when it comes out. But I don't know how much Sylvanas actually comes into play when you're on Zandalar.
Not a whole lot that I think.
And Thanos is there, so...
Yeah, and
One presumes that she is the one telling him what to do.
Right.
Sure.
There's not a lot of her being mentioned. There's little bits and pieces. There's a quest where you... Yeah, that would be spoilers. There is stuff involving certain Forsaken characters that implies that Sylvanas has plans, and she's using those characters to advance those plans.
But we don't actually see her.
No, not that I
yet.
So I feel like what we're going to do is we're going to do what we did. It's sort of like a Pandaria Part 2 almost, where we go to these people and we ask them to be our allies and all of this other stuff. And meanwhile, there's other stuff going on in the background. And in a patch or two down the road, all of a sudden we'll start to dovetail back towards that whole Horde and Alliance story again. But I don't feel like we're going to end with the comeuppance of Sylvanas Windrunner or anything like that. I feel like we're going to move beyond that fairly quickly to something else.
I think so, too. Yeah, and I sort of in that point as well.
I'm going to be upfront here. One of the problems I have with this story and with the faction conflict in general, but really the way it's being played out here, is that sinking feeling I have that yet again, the narrative has the Horde basically smash the Alliance right in the face and get off scot-free. Nothing happens. There's no ultimate cost to the Horde narratively for having done this. In the end, there will be no real consequence. Look at what happened at the end of Siege of Orgrimmar.
Yeah, I'm going to...
Siege of Orgrimmar happened. There was this huge invasion of the city. Because the Horde participated in the invasion of their own city, the status quo was completely upheld by the end of it. There was no real difference. We got a new war chief who didn't really do anything and died in expansion later. There's no payoff narratively for these events. There needs to be payoff. There needs to be a consequence to these things happening. If there isn't, and I've got this sinking feeling that there isn't going to be one, then it was all basically just awful. And see, that's one of the things I'm afraid of. And I've got one more thing to say before.
Sure.
One of the things that I really, back in Warlords of Draenor, I was the one telling everyone to give Warlords a chance. And other people are telling me, no, man, I don't like how this feels going into this. I don't like it. And I was wrong. I told people to like wait and see, and I was wrong. And I feel like that's happening now, where people keep telling me to wait and see. But the pieces are in place for this to either be really great or really awful. Right now, it's extremely painful for me as a player to play through it. I've now done it both Horde side and Alliance side. There's stuff we're not talking about. One of the weird things about these quests when you do them Alliance side is that the Tauren are called conscripts.
Yes.
Which is really strange. How is she conscripting the Tauren? What does that mean, that she's conscripting the Tauren? That's something that needs to get dealt with. There's a lot of stuff that needs to get dealt with. This is a really good narrative team. I feel like that needs to be said, even as I'm saying that I'm not enjoying it. This is a strong narrative team, so I do want to give them a chance, but there's a lot of stuff here where it could go really bad if there's no consequences afterward.
You also have to realize that the narrative team that is handling this expansion and Legion to a degree is not the same narrative team that we had in Mists of Pandaria and Warlords. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been a complete shift in writers and everything, and the people that are kind of orchestrating all of this. I'm willing to sit back and watch and wait, because what they delivered in Legion was so far above anything we saw in Warlords that I'm like, okay, y'all can tell a good story, so I'm going to be patient here and wait for the story to pay off. But man, these first few chapters are really grim. You know what I mean? And Joe, you were going to say something. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, they've poised this story, even from what we've seen so far, at least in my, like, limited view, to do either a couple things. I think we're going to get a payoff at some point, because I think it's ripe for that, but I think it's going to be sooner than later, just like Anne was saying. I think this particular conflict is going to get resolved early, and we're going to move past it, and I think there will be a payoff. I don't think it'll be what we're thinking, and this is me predicting, and this is not insider knowledge or me having seen anything in the beta or anything like that. I think Rossi's right in that the Horde as a whole is not going to bear it. I think the Forsaken are. And I think that's going to be how everything resolves, is that they're going to bear the brunt of that. And I think that'll be interesting. But they also have the story set up for a bunch of different swerves, like character motivations, character shifting, characters stepping away potentially from, you know, what's going on in the greater conflicts. So I think we're going to get a whole lot of resolution a whole lot quicker than, like, let's say we did in Legion. And I think that's going to be okay.
The part that I'm kind of unhappy with right now is, like I said, people aren't questioning anything. They're just sort of blindly following. But then again, I do know some of the stuff that's going to come up, and I know that's going to be touched on, at least with one character, and I'm not going to spoil anything here, but fairly soon here, we're going to see people suddenly start to go, wait, Sylvanas, you know, maybe this isn't okay, and I feel like that's going to be the start of it. Do I want to see some kind of comeuppance presented there? Yes, because we have a different leader on the Alliance now, and Anduin has seen a lot growing up, and he extended his hand very willingly in Before the Storm, and look where that got him. It didn't get him very far at all. I don't think that he would, given all that he's lost and all that he's seen, I don't think that he would so willingly just step aside. I don't know. It's like I want to see something happen, particularly given, you know, the scope of what's about to happen in game as far as Teldrassil is concerned. And yet at the same time, I don't want to see Sylvanas get the Garrosh treatment, because while I did not like what Garrosh did, and yes, I did want to punch him in the face, and I was very happy to punch him in the face several times over on several different difficulty levels in several different raids, right? I was perfectly happy with that. I felt kind of like discontent with how he ended up in Warlords of Draenor. It felt like he was kind of a footnote and he didn't really get a resolution. It was more like, hi, we're going to smack this guy down and he's going to die horribly. And yay, don't you feel better now? And I'm like, no, No, actually, I don't. I kind of wish that there had been more to that character. Like,
I don't know. I've said it a few times now.
Yeah.
Narratively speaking, it is not. It's not a good resolution to have Sylvanas just taken down, because that's not really a punishment for her.
No.
Sylvanas, if you look at before the storm, Sylvanas is absolutely, completely unwilling to consider the possibility that people could accept you from your previous life. To the point where, when you look at the Three Sisters comic, the very idea that she might be able to reach rapprochement, the fact that her sister says, "I'm sorry that I just left. I'm sorry that I didn't think about how you would feel," shakes her so hard that she abandons her plot to have her sisters murdered. And she had, you know, I'm going to just flat out say this. Sylvanas Windrunner has always been evil, but she's been evil on her own terms. And when I say always, I don't mean before she died, obviously. I mean since she was raised as an undead, because she is incapable of being the person she was, and she's incapable of coming to terms with it. And you see that in Before the Storm. You see that when she destroys the Desolate Council, who are trying to flee to the Alliance side to be with their loved ones. She cannot conceive of it. She even says to Nathanos, "There's an infection. It's like a disorder. I can't let this spread. I can't let other Forsaken look at it this way. It'll just hurt them. It's all a lie."
In a way, it's kind of appropriate that we were started talking about Jaina and then we moved into Sylvanas, because Jaina's story is all about her finally accepting who she is as a person and saying goodbye to that side of her that just doesn't exist anymore. And Sylvanas is unable to move beyond that.
Yeah,
so there's this interesting dichotomy going on between the two of them. Really.
I don't think it's not even fair to blame her for that, because she is undead.
She's in stasis. She's in perpetual stasis.
Why? Of course she can't move past it. How do you move past being a wound? You know, there is no way for her to you know, but it might be possible, and that terrifies her. There's this, that everything in both Before the Storm and the Three Sisters comic points to this. Everything in War Crimes, when she says, you know, she starts twitching.
She's
when
she's
said
talking
it
to since day one when you first clicked on her, and she said, "What are we if not slaves to this torment?"
Mm-hmm. She still says it.
Does she still say it? I haven't heard it in a while.
Yeah, if you go through the quests and you click on her, left click, not right click to bring up the interface, she says it. It's one of the things she cycles through still.
And that's, if you think about it in terms of, I feel like people are trying to like point her, they're trying to give her an exculpatory thing. They're trying to make it be the old gods. They're trying to make it be some force driving her.
I don't think
her.
It's an outside force. I think it's just her.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. This is a person who would absolutely do those things. And because they make sense to her, that's her worldview now. That's how she sees the world. The world is a place where no matter what you do, you end up this thing. You know, not just what are we if not slaves to this torment. This is the world. Look at what happened to me. I am a cautionary tale to you. Don't do what I did. Certainly don't reach out to the person from your past that's still alive, because she'll just hurt you. And that's exactly what happened in War Crimes. The person that she reached out to just hurt her. I mean, granted, she was going to kill her sister and raise her as undead, but in her eyes, that was them being together. This is a person who can't view things like a living person.
She's not even really a person, per se. She is, but she isn't. I think she's trying to figure out... No, I don't think that she's trying to figure out what she is. I think she's working with the understanding that she knows exactly what she is, and she cannot be anything other than that, and she's trying to get the world to cleave to that. And any time there's any moment of dissonance from how she views herself, that's when she goes a little bit out there.
Harder. She got harder into the lack of humanity.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me... I mean, I hate to say this, but it reminds me of like old school World of Darkness, like second edition back in the 90s, when like you had these factions of vampires that like purposely eschewed their humanity anytime they felt anything close to it. Yeah, thank you very much. But they would basically, anytime they ever felt an inkling of like human morality, they would go murder like 10 people because they didn't want to be human. They wanted to be monsters, which to me, I think that the absolute worst thing you could do to Sylvanas, the worst thing you could do wouldn't be to kill her, wouldn't be to remove her, wouldn't even be to take away the Forsaken from her. It would be to infuse her with something that gave her back a sense of humanity and the weight of everything she's done to come crashing down on her.
It would be to make her feel again.
Yep. And I say that we've already talked about the book Before the Storm quite a bit, but imagine if something like what happened to Kalia happened to Sylvanas. What would happen to her?
See, I don't think she'd be able to cope. I've argued from the beginning the worst thing you could do to Sylvanas would be to raise her from the dead.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely, and exactly.
Part of the reason for that would be because that would cut her away from the Forsaken in a way that nothing else could.
Completely irreparable.
Yeah, she wouldn't be dead. She wouldn't be their icon anymore. She'd be something else. And she'd remember everything she did, but she'd feel... There's a really interesting part of War Crimes where they talk about the Phantom Limb thing. And I'm going to talk about it in returns to both Jaina and
Sylvanas, I wanted you to bring that up because that's actually a good point with the War Crimes stuff.
There's a part in War Crimes where Sylvanas goes to meet with her sister more or less out of curiosity. She wants to see what Varisa wants, but she's not expecting what happens, which is that when Varisa says something off, just something unguarded in a brief moment, she's like, it was like a phantom limb. She couldn't feel it, but she could feel its absence. And she starts like twitching a little bit. She doesn't actually physically twitch, but she's like, it's like twitching in me, this sense of love, what love is. I don't know what it is, but I can feel that I don't feel right. And it's like Jaina, because Jaina is a living person who's lived, you know, the past decade, she can look at what happened with her father and she can say, yeah, I get what you were trying to tell me now. I understand it. She can make that movement. She can look at everything that's happened and still, she's still herself. She hasn't just abandoned who she was. She hasn't abandoned her motivation for doing the things she did.
She's saying goodbye to that chapter in her life.
She's moved herself to a different place. Sylvanas can't do it. And the thing is like when she had Varisa there, as she kept visiting Varisa, it was like a drug to her. She kept going back. She kept trying to get Varisa to come live with her. She was like, come stay in the Undercity. You don't have anything left in the Alliance. You know, we'll kill Hellscream and you can come live with me. And, you know, meanwhile, she's thinking, well, of course, I'll have to kill her because nobody will accept her as a living person. But that's fine. I'll raise her. And then the two of us will be, you know, undead windrunners and everything will fear us. That's what love is like, isn't it? That's the thing. Jaina can make, she can look back, realize her mistakes and pick a new direction, whether or not it's right or wrong. Sylvanas can't.
She doesn't have that luxury.
Well, especially when you look at like her relationship with Thanos, right? Like when you look at Blightcaller, like in life, that was love between the two. And now what they have is the model of her love, right? Like she forced him to be rebuilt and would have blood dark mirror.
Oh God,
right?
That's creepy. And I just thought about that. The whole reason, like, like her expression of love to Varisa was come live with me and I'll make you undead forever.
Exactly.
And stay with me forever. And that didn't work. So what did she do? She went to Nathanos and said, hey, how would you like a new upgraded body?
No, she didn't even ask him how he would like it. She said he was going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Because she can order him to do it.
Oh.
Exactly.
One of hers.
And that's what I meant. Like I've since that came out, I have always believed that process that Nathanos went through was meant for her sister.
Yeah, probably. She wouldn't want her sister to just be a regular Forsaken.
Exactly.
She'd want her to be as close to her as possible.
But because she can't waste the resource of the Valkyr, right? She has one lined up ready to go for this outfit. She's been rejected by her sister. So who's the next best thing? The thing that loves her in her approximation of love, Nathanos, get over here and accept.
Okay, that's creepy.
We have
like a selection of emails and we're not going to be able to get to them because we are running low on time. But there is one of them here that I wanted to address. And this one is from someone named Tim, who says, greetings, Tri-Hosts of Wisdom. I had a bit of a theory I wanted to run by each of you regarding Sylvanas and why the Loa chose her. Specifically, I believe that the Loa chose her expecting her leadership to bring the Horde along with the Horde military to Zandalar itself. Most other Horde leaders, save maybe Gallowix, likely would have pursued some sort of peace with the Alliance in some form, leading the Horde to really not need any more allies and have no real reason to visit Zandalar. This would leave Zandalar to face problems it might not have been able to without the Horde at its side. The Horde helps Zandalar, Zandalar helps the Horde. This seems like something the Loa would really want. One other thought is on this. If this theory is correct, would this have been a lucky guess by the Loa? Or is there perhaps a time-based Loa with similar powers to Nozdarmu that would have seen her as the best option? This is a good theory.
It is. And the problem that I have is I really want to answer it with what I think happened here, but I can't because it involves spoilers for BFA.
Okay. Major spoilers?
It's early in the thing, so I don't know, but I'm still not 100% comfortable because I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen what happened there.
We won't address that then. What I will say,
my response would actually be much, much spoilier than that because it involves a major part of the storyline. So
okay.
Yeah, let me say this. I think there is a very specific reason that whatever Loa spoke to Vol'jin chose Sylvanas, and I think that the idea of it will become very clear very early into the expansion.
Okay.
I know what Loa it is up front.
I mean,
same here.
Yeah,
same here. I absolutely do.
I haven't played through that content, but I think I know who you're talking about right away. The thing is like this theory totally made sense to me though, because it was like, oh yeah, okay. Because Loa are, if you haven't played on the beta at all, Zandalar is chock full of Loa all over the dang place, and you talk to them and interact with them, and there's all kinds of things that are going on with them. A lot of the quests tie into that kind of stuff. It's a lot of troll lore over there, and it's really, really fantastic, and it's fun. Like, it's gorgeous, and it's fun to play through, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot. I know we've talked to Kul'Tiras back and forth, I don't know how many times, like, to death, but the Zandalar experience is... it's beautiful. It's beautifully done. And
just one thing. The Zandalar Isle is to the Loa what Mount Hyjal is to the ancients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if.
Or like what Pandaria is to the August Celestials.
Yeah, very much so. And there's probably like one of the reasons that Zandalar Isle continues to exist as an island and wasn't just destroyed is the Loa.
Mm-hmm.
They, the power of them is what helped, you know, create the barrier that kept that island there. So there is a lot going on with the Loa and the Zandalar that doesn't go on anywhere else. It's a Loa that makes it so the Zandalar can have the equivalent of paladins. If you've seen, you remember the guys in Throne of Thunder. That's mm-hmm. a Loa. It's a specific Loa. I can say that's not a spoiler. Razan, the king, the Loa of Kings.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, is an awesome Tyranosaur. He's a big devil sword.
So cool.
I love him. I love him. He's got the coolest armor in the damn game.
If you're not, even you can be like me and be mostly an Alliance player, but you know, dinosaurs, man. I'm never gonna say bad things about dinosaurs. So
this is why we're friends.
But yeah, I really liked this theory because as soon as he said it like that, I'm like, oh, yeah, that does make sense. Because if Bane had been promoted, Bane would have been fine. Would have been fine with allying with the Alliance, even if just in a temporary capacity, because he's been talking to Anduin all along. You know, they're friends. Although that's kind of not so much now because of stuff in Before the Storm, which, by the way, if you haven't read Before the Storm, you probably should do that. It's a very good book.
What are you guys waiting for at this point? Seriously, if you're listening to this podcast, obviously you're interested in this stuff. Go read the book.
you should go check out the book. Anyway,
Lothar might have done much of the same too, I think, because he would have wanted to mostly be left alone. Like,
who?
He wouldn't want to engage Lothar.
Oh yeah, Lothar wouldn't have had anything to do with it.
He's too close to the Alliance borders. He would not want to pick that fight.
Well, and also, I mean, we're talking about Lothar here. I don't think that he would be like, yeah, let's go ally with a troll nation. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, not considering what that is, a doorstep and what he's been, you know.
Yeah.
The
Sindori do not have the best history with trolls.
Didn't you guys try to get the Imani to kill us at one point? Oh, well, you know, water under the bridge.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
think Lothar would have had anything to do with it. And then Gallywix might have, yeah, because, I mean,
money.
if there's gold Zandalar. Involved, and boy, is there ever a lot of gold in Zandalar.
I mean, all you have to do is tell him that there's a city of gold, and he'd show up.
There's a giant pyramid made out of this stuff.
Yeah, but the Zandalari are the ones who made goblins happen.
Yeah, that's true.
By enslaving them.
Would Gallywix care, though, if there was enough wealth involved?
I'm not saying Gallywix would care. I'm saying the Zandalar would care. Having a bunch of goblins show up is... That's like roughly the equivalent of
it's the, anathema.
Yeah, it's no, plus, we don't want that. Plus, these guys are guys we like.
Let me just say that I don't think that, I mean, even if the Loa had told Fulgen, yeah, you should make Gallywick's leader, I think Fulgen would have said, what?
What?
No.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Pick anyone else on the table. Anyone
could
else?
You repeat that.
Now, the only other one that I could see that they could have named that maybe would have been okay would have been Sarfang. And that's because I think at that point there's enough mutual respect between the orcs and the trolls that it could have worked.
Yeah, but
he
Sour
also
Fang,
wouldn't have wanted to pick a fight.
Yeah,
not
Sour,
at that point.
Sourfang, I don't think that Sourfang would have done anything to the Alliance. Because, I mean, if you've played through Wrath of the Lich King and you did Ice Crown Citadel, you saw what Varian did for Sourfang up on Ice Crown Citadel. He let him go ahead and grab the body of his son. If you play through it on Alliance side, if you play through it on Horde side, I think it's different.
It is. Yeah.
But if you play through it on Alliance side, Varian tells his men to stand down and lets Sourfang come in and lets him leave with the body of his son. Like, he lets him do it. And Jaina just completely dissolves into tears because she's like, oh my god, somebody's finally doing the thing that I wanted them to be doing. And she says that she's proud of Varian. So, I mean, Sourfang has, he's not friendly with the Alliance by any standpoint, but he does have some respect for Rin.
There's also a layer of honor to everything he does, too.
There
right?
is.
Like,
there
so
is.
So if it's not honorable, he wouldn't do it.
No, I don't think that he would.
You may not be right about that.
Well, you know,
that you
have,
it depends
about
on how you frame that honor. Like, if it's
yeah.
a duty.
I'm using his words, but they're spoilers for next week, so we can't talk about it. So
yeah,
let's just move on.
We're not gonna talk about that then. However, yeah, Tim, it's an interesting theory, and it's all kind of tied into Zandalar. So I hope you're a Horde player because there's a lot going on over there, and there's more going on with what you suggested, and a lot of what you suggested will kind of be addressed in one way or another on Zandalar. So that might be something you want to play through. I think that's going to wrap us up, though, because I think we're pretty much at the end of the show here. For you guys, listeners of Blizzard Watch, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Obviously, we've talked about a lot of books today. What did we talk about? We talked about War Crimes. We talked about Before the Storm. We talked about Arthas very briefly. We talked about... Anyway, Blizzard books that are available as audiobooks, they are available on Audible, and you can use that as your free audiobook download, including Before the Storm, the one that we've been talking to death for the past several weeks. You can use that as your freebie for that trial with Audible if you want to. You can download those titles. You can download thousands of others. Even if you don't want a Warcraft book, Audible's got plenty more to choose from. And you can sign up there by going to blizzardwatch.com/audible. Every sign up helps support the show and everything that we do. Blizzard Watch, it's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. And your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question on answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. So, final thoughts, you guys. I know that we addressed what we kind of wanted to see out of Sylvanas in the Warbringer thing, and we already saw what Jaina in the Warbringer thing had. What do you guys hope to see out of the Azshara Warbringers? Joe?
I want to see more about the Ol'Gadi deal and the city that she built sort of after the whole thing, because I feel that we haven't gotten enough information about that at all, and I need more. Also, I feel that we might get a little bit more of that, because I need to know what the heck that thing during the Warbringers teaser was that was weird and fleshy and had a whole ton of orange eyes that opened up all at once. It was such a small little thing, but somebody pointed it out to me last week. So thanks, Nin, for that. And I can't unsee it, and I need to know more.
Rossi, what about you?
Well, we've been told that she made a deal with the old gods, but what we've ever seen is like a little tiny bit of them reaching out to her. I wouldn't mind getting to see that. I have a pet theory that she didn't actually build the city, that she just inhabited one she happened to find.
Nyalotha, maybe?
Maybe. So that's one possibility right there. There's a reason that when you go into the Burning Crusade, it turns out that there's heretics that worship Neptalon. And I think that's one of the reasons she targeted Neptalon. And I think you, of all people, made a point that you wanted to see it turn out that Neptulon was like a plant, yes. that he wasn't necessarily free. And that would be interesting. But I really mostly want to see just exactly. I would actually like to see, was there any point where she felt like she was wrong? I don't think there was. So I want to see that.
Yeah, I think what I want to see is not so much, you know, where she's been, although I do want to see where she's been, because it's been, what, 10,000 years? I would like to see what's going on in her noggin, and I don't know if one animated short is really going to cover all of that, but I kind of hope that we get a better glimpse into what she's thinking, because the last time we saw her, she was the queen of an empire that crumbled around her, and she took the only chance she really had at survival. What did she pay for that, and is she okay with what she paid for that? You know, that kind of thing? I don't know. Either which way, it will be very interesting to see. I don't know which one we're going to see, but I'm assuming that we're going to have another episode come out tomorrow, and I can't wait, because Jaina was really good. Again, you guys, if you have any emails or questions for Lore Watch, rather, you can email those to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just put Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know that it's intended for the show, and we'll see if we can get to more of those next time. Thank you guys, as always, for listening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.